Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I'm
going to read one verse this morning, text 14, from Canto 3, chapter 31. This is a prayer amongst a whole series of prayers by a soul within the womb feeling quite uncomfortable and wishing shelter of the personality of Godhead. Highly philosophical living entity, still within the womb, quite articulate. Translation: I am separated from the Supreme Lord because of my being in this material body, which is made of five elements, and therefore my qualities and senses are being misused. Although I am essentially spiritual, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental to material nature and the living entities, there's three points. There's three becauses. And then the result is surrender. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental to material nature and the living entities, because he is devoid of such a material body, and because he is always glorious in his spiritual qualities, I offer my obeisances unto him. And three paragraphs purport. The difference between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is that the living entity is prone to be subjected to material nature, whereas the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always transcendental to material nature, as well as to the living entities. When the living entity is put into material nature, then his senses and qualities are polluted or designated. Designated. What's the Sanskrit word for designated? Upadi. We'll come back to the upadi. There is no possibility for the Supreme Lord to become embodied by material qualities or material senses, for he is above the influence of material nature and cannot possibly be put in the darkest of ignorance like the living entities. Because of his full knowledge, he is never subjected to the influence of material nature. Material nature is always under his control, and it is therefore not possible that material nature can control the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, first paragraph is the distinction between the two, the jiva and the Lord. Second paragraph: since the identity of the living entity is very minute, he is prone to be subjected to material nature. But when he is freed from this material body, which is false, he attains the same spiritual nature as the Supreme Lord. At that time, there is no qualitative difference between him and the Supreme Lord, but because he is not so quantitatively powerful as to be never put under the influence of material nature, he is quantitatively different from the Lord. Paragraph, third paragraph. Very interesting. The entire process of devotional service is to purify oneself of this contamination of material nature and to put oneself on the spiritual platform where he is qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Vedas it is said, listen to this, the living entity is always free. Asango yayam purushaha. Says it again. The living entity is liberated. Isn't it nice to know you're liberated? His material contamination is temporary, and his actual position is that he is liberated. This liberation is achieved by Krishna consciousness, which begins from the point of surrender. Therefore, it is said here, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Person. End of purport. So this is the third verse. And the first and the second has the same refrain as now this third verse. I offer my obeisances unto the personality of Godhead. Bande pumamsam. I offer my obeisances unto the personality of Godhead. So many nice things. Little sharing from the study that I've been doing on Tattvas and Dharva connects very, very nicely with this verse and purport. Our primary means of knowing anything, knowing Krishna or anything, is through pramana, evidence, the means of knowing something. And the best of all evidence is that which comes from a perfect person. And of that evidence that comes from a perfect person, the best of all is Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the first part of Tattvasandarbha. The second part is, what is that knowledge that's knowable through Srimad Bhagavatam? So the knowledge is the knowledge of Krishna. That's the there's the book, and then there's the subject matter of the book. Sambandhi Tattva is the language that Jiva Goswami uses. So to indicate what is the subject of the book, he indicates there are three principal areas of how we can look at what's the subject matter of the book. And one of them is the realization of Vyas, because that's the subject matter of the book. The realization of Vyas is based upon Narada's instruction to him, now that you've divided the one Veda into four, and you've summarized the Puranic portion from 1 billion to 400,000 verses, and you're feeling not satisfied, it's because you have not sufficiently glorified the personality of Godhead. The other things are not wrong. They lead to the personality of Godhead. But you haven't sufficiently glorified the personality of Godhead. So he didn't just say, write another book that's glorifying the personality of Godhead. He gave him a sadhana or a procedure, like we have a sadhana or procedure to follow. And by following that procedure, that was part one, so part two is you'll get some realization. And then write the book based on that realization. So the subject matter of There's the book, and then its subject matter. So the subject matter is Vyasa's realization in really short capsule form, like four verses. So embedded in those four verses is Srimad Bhagavatam. You understand those four verses, you can understand Srimad Bhagavatam, or in reverse. Here, this is expanding the message of those four verses. That's what the Bhagavatam is. It's an expansion of the realization of Vyas. So in the realization of Vyas, first it says, Samyak Praniyate Amale. He fixed his mind in trance. Samyak Samihate Amale. Without any material contamination. Trance. Absorption. And then he saw something. He saw apashat purusham purnam. He saw the purusham purnam. He saw the personality of Godhead. Mayam cha tad apashrayam. And he also saw maya under his control. So he's not controlled. Maya is under his control. And then he saw the living entities. Paropi, although para, although transcendental, just as this is saying, although transcendental, manute anartam. They think themselves trigunam. They think themselves a product of the three modes of material nature, even though they're transcendental. So qualitatively, one. Paropi, like the Supreme Lord, is para. Living entity is para prakriti, in the language of Bhagavad Gita. Living entity is para prakriti. But api, although transcendental, living as he identifies himself with material nature. So the living entity is awarded a body by material nature. Why? Because a living entity has a spirit of rebelliousness towards he who is fully transcendental always. Never covered by a material body, never influenced by the modes of nature, never influenced by karma. He's the controller of all those things. But a living entity is rebellious towards that person, and therefore they're awarded a material body which they wrongly identify with and think themselves a product of material nature, exactly as Bhagavad Gita says the demoniac nature thinks. Just to make this a little relevant, about a week ago, something like that, I was conducting a program at Washington University in St. Louis. Washington University is a very good school academically, and so the students there are academically, you know, sharp. And in that school, one of the trends of the school, or the something that's very popular in that school, is social activism. You all know what social activism is, right? Let me make a difference. I want to be involved in something that's going to make the world a better place, and, you know, be an advocate of a particular cause or a movement or, you know, ecology or protect the whales or, you know, something. Women's rights or, you know, something. Civil rights or something. Cause. Social activism. So I was asked to speak about the intersection between social activism and spirituality. So there's a language that I learned since I became a devotee, because it wasn't around when I was younger. Venn diagram, all kids know what it is. There's a circle, and you bring them together, and there's some parts where the circles overlap. There's some qualities that are shared, and there's some qualities that are distinct. It's a Venn diagram. So we did the Venn diagram thing. And here's what social activism is about. Here's what it promotes. And here's what spirituality does, and what spirituality promotes. And without spirituality, then could we, everybody move forward a little bit, because we got people out by the door, and that's not so nice. Just move forward a little bit more, and then Ricky. Oh, very good. Thank you very much. The fallibility of the soul in contact with matter is going to prevail even in social activism. Greed, lust, anger, you know, these six enemies. So the social activism can end up being polluted along with that which is attempting to reform. It's guaranteed. So there has to be, for social activism to be effective, is there must be a spiritual conception of self. Say it in reverse. Without the spiritual conception of self, social activism is doomed to fail. Because its efforts will be motivated by something mixed, and its results will be tainted with something mixed. So you don't get what you want. You get another thing you don't want. Then you have to reform that and reform that and reform that. It's not going to get reformed. The living entity is entangled. Paropi manute anartam. Because of thinking oneself to be a product of matter, anarthas will be there. Unwanted things will be there in the heart. So, in the course of this discussion at Washington University, somebody was doing the social activism message that said, why does God have to be in the picture? No. Social activism without God. Why do you have to have God in the picture? So, one answer is because he's in the picture. If you want to have something that's real, you want to get from unreal to real, you have to have the real picture. He's in the picture. But if he's out of the picture, let's just go down the path of he's out of the picture. Or maybe he's, let's do agnostic. Maybe he's in the picture, maybe he's not in the picture. Who knows? So why do we have to include something that we don't know? So that I just point blank ask, if God is out of the picture, then you please tell me if life is simply a combination of material elements. Like, a male and a female get together and produce a living entity, and there's no spirit and there's no controller of matter and spirit. Is that your advocacy? Because that, according to Bhagavad Gita, that's exactly demoniac mentality. You don't need God in the picture. Life is simply a combination of the emulsifications of male and female, and that's it. There's matter, the laws that govern matter, and that's it. There's no rules. There's no, you want to be a social activist, you manufacture some rules. Well, some people may not like those rules, they make another set of rules. Without going into it. And then it gets really contentious about whose rules are the right rules, and you have the same problem all over again. And so the response I got was, well, at least it's something we should consider. Okay, let's consider it. Is that what life is? Is there nothing else? And are there consequences of there's nothing else in terms of social activism? Or, if there is something else, shouldn't it be factored? Shouldn't that be an inquiry? The inquiry of the Vedic wisdom is, where does everything come from? That's a good question. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Where does everything come from? And it's an age-old question. How many gazillions of dollars have been spent in research and understanding where does everything come from? And why do people ask? Why do people spend all that money? They could spend money on other things, improving the quality of life, or building better roads, or renewable energy sources, or whatever some social activist cause. Why do people do that? It's natural to do that. That's why people do it. It's not like genetically wired. It's a natural question. Lord Brahma did it when he was first born. Where does everything come from? Where did I come from? What's it all about? Oh, it's a natural question. The Vedas ask the same question, and there's a source. And that source is beyond, it's our qualitatively one, quantitatively different message that's here. The living entity. Impersonalists have a whole other idea. Materialists have one idea. There isn't a soul. And impersonalists have another idea. The soul is God. And they have an interesting way of arriving at that. A convoluted way, I should say. Way of arriving at that. Brahman gets covered. Covered by what? Covered by upadis. That's their teaching. And the upadis aren't real. Okay, if the Upadhis aren't real, then how does Brahman get covered? And where did Upadhis come from? If there's only one thing, how can there be Brahman and Upadhis? That means there's two things. I mean, the logic is quite fallacious. But embedded in the purport, is just exactly as our prana mantra to Srila Prabhupada says. Nirvishesha shunyavadi paschacha desatarine. Right in this verse, he's defeating Mayavad philosophy through the medium of the living entity that's within the womb praying this way. So what's that? There's two entities. There's the Supreme Lord, and there's the Jiva. They're qualitatively one and quantitatively different. So the Supreme Lord, who's quantitatively different, never takes on a material body. It's exactly what's stated here. Doesn't accept a material body. I, this living entity within the womb of my mother, am praying to the Supreme Lord, who's never covered. I'm covered. And because I'm covered, by material contamination, polluted by that material contamination, or my designations, which is not who I am, but I'm thinking that's who I am. That's the upadhi idea. But the Supreme Lord isn't covered by upadhis. It's a different classification of Brahman, Parabrahman, and the living entity. That's also Brahman. Bhagavad Gita says it. The Vedas say it. Chandogya Upanishad says it. The favorite aphorism of Shankaracharya, Tattvamasi, which means literally, I am that. And what's that? Well, that is Brahman. I am Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi, same. So we're Brahman, so we're God, the inference is. But there are two categories of Brahman. The one that is never covered by material contamination, never takes on a material body, never influenced by the modes of nature, never influenced by karma. Therefore I take shelter. Because so this distinction is necessary, and being really, really clear, not just emotional or sentimental, but being very clear what our position is and what the Supreme Lord's position is. Therefore, we should take shelter of him. It's quite logical, and it's not just, you know, intellectually logical, it's ontologically logical. It makes sense from you know, of the picture of what is, what reality is. And that's part of Vyasa's realization, going back. So Vyasa saw in his trance, he saw the Supreme Lord, he saw Maya, and he saw the living entities that were covered by Maya. But he also saw some of those living entities were becoming freed from the covering of Maya by bhakti yoga, by the linking process. But most people don't know that, and so Vyas, then Vyas compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam to help the living entities, that's us, who are covered by material bodies. This one is the living entity which is within the womb, saying specifically, my mind and senses are contaminated. My qualities and senses are being misused, although I'm essentially spiritual. Now, distinct from me, that's my situation. Now there's your situation. And because I understand clearly, same, if we can understand clearly the distinction, therefore we'll take shelter. That's the linking process that frees us from the limitation. Nice. So here's the three becauses. Because he's transcendental to material nature and the living entities. That is, material nature is under his control, the living entities are under his control. We're under his control. You're under his control through the inferior or the superior energy, but we're under his control. It's our position. So, you know, people don't want to acknowledge I'm under control. I want to be free. You know, there's the spirit of nationalism and the spirit of individualism and the spirit of all kinds of things that say I'm free, and it's platitudes only. It's delusion. We're not free. That's social activism. I want freedom from oppression, freedom from this and that. Abuses of the system, and let's do it right, and, you know, but it's still conceptually mistaken. Fundamentally mistaken. Fundamentally, not just flawed, it's just, it's not going to get you there. It's a vehicle that isn't going to get you to your destination without a spiritual conception. And the spiritual conception requires the Supreme. I like this girl's question, well, why does God have to be in this picture? And no, this isn't somebody not attending the program. This is someone attending the program. So, you know, I will take it. It wasn't a challenging question. It's, I want to understand kind of a question. But it's, you know, the atmosphere in which we're moving is in the language of Srila Prabhupada, surcharged with opposition. We live in a culture that's heavily influenced by the personality of Kali and going down fast. And we're trying to be Krishna-conscious devotees in that atmosphere. So it requires a lot of shelter-taking to be protected from that influence. And shelter-taking is, the verse is telling us, it's enhanced or supported or impelled by understanding Krishna's position and understanding our position. So here's the three becauses again. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental to material nature and the living entities, he's shelter. He's worthy shelter. We want friendship, we want love, we want to feel safe. There's shelter, real shelter, not imaginary. Then the second because is because he's devoid of such a material body. Now, Mayavadis say, and worldly people, similarly, if they accept that Krishna is a person, they think manushyam tanamashritam. They think he's assumed a physical form like we have. He's one of us, or we're like him. He may be a better version of us, but he's not in a different category. He has a material body. No. He doesn't have a material body. Well, what's that? You don't have any experience of bodies that aren't material. What's that? It bounces. Doesn't go in. But he's in another category. And how can we understand that? We can understand it through the medium of devotion, and devotion that's impelled by submission, at least through authoritative source understanding. He doesn't have a material body. Doesn't have a material body. And because he doesn't have a material body, he's not like us, as the first part of the verse says, misguided and misdirected in the use of his senses and faculties. The reasoning faculty and the mind and his thoughts. He's not influenced like that. He's a perfect person. Eternally perfect person. Not like a higher grade. That's what the Mayavadis say. Covered by a more subtle form of the mode of goodness, but covered. Not like us, but just, you know, a better version of us. Basically, that's their idea. At least the Parichayed Vad group of Mayavadis. So then the third is, he is always glorious in his spiritual qualities. There are several, right in Vyasadeva's trance of realization, right after hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, after Vyas compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, the revised version, because he had previously compiled all the Vedas, which included the Puranas, which included Srimad Bhagavatam, then he had this instruction from Narada to sit in trance of meditation upon the personality of Godhead and then compose. So he revised version 2, Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he taught it to Shukadev. And Shukadev was chronologically, before he heard Srimad Bhagavatam in its revised form from Vyasadeva, he was already a perfectly realized Brahmavadi. Wasn't a Mayavadi, but he was perfectly realized in transcendence. He had no attraction for anything material, but he was attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. What does that say? Two things. It says the qualities of Krishna are transcendental. He was not attracted to something material, but he was attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam, so the qualities of Krishna are not material. The logic is very clear. And then he went on and taught it. He taught it to Maharaj Parikshit and the assembly of all the sages, which included even Vyasadeva, the one who taught him Srimad Bhagavatam, and Vyasadeva's spiritual master, Narada Muni, who inspired him and already had the same realization. So Shukadev's speaking was very special. Even they were attracted to hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from him. And what's our qualification? We're coming from some dark place and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadev Goswami. Whew. What mercy. And so the other thing, so the qualities of Krishna as this third because, the qualities of Krishna are very special. They're fully transcendental, fully attractive with all spiritual, replete with spiritual potency. And so the other is the process of bhakti surpasses the realization of Brahman. Our goal is not to become liberated. I mean, liberation will come, but the goal is not liberation. For those that understand what bhakti is, it's to become attracted to Krishna, which is beyond liberation, because Krishna is beyond liberation. As Shukadeva Goswami became attracted to, specifically the language of the Bhagavatam says, that the very special qualities of ajita, it's significant. Ajita means? Unconquerable. The living entity is conquerable by material nature and its own little fallibility. So living entity is jita and Krishna is ajita. And in that word ajita, it says these same things that are in the two first becauses. And then his qualities of ajita are attractive even to the Atmaramas. That's another verse in that section of Vyasa's realization. Even the Atmaramas. Atmarama means one who is satisfied within oneself. So I don't need anything else. If one who is an Atmarama is already satisfied. So if they're attracted to something, it's not because I'm lacking in something, I need something to feel complete, then this other thing will help me feel complete. They're already feeling complete and still attracted. That means, again, it's higher than Brahman realization. It's on the platform of Brahman, but it's higher than the platform of Brahman realization. It's loving service. That's bhakti. Bhakti yogam adhoksajay. Apashat purusham purnam. So, although we're Krishna is in his transcendental position, and if one understands his transcendental position, then the linking process of bhakti involves hearing about him. Through hearing about him in devotion from a qualified devotee, becoming inspired to take his shelter, which is this living entity within the womb, taking shelter. And taking shelter isn't a one-time event. Once upon a time, I took shelter of Krishna, and it was really nice. And then I went about my business. And because I had done it, I took shelter of Krishna. It was really nice. It's an ongoing process. Shelter means that you stay there. And what's the impetus to stay there? You understand, you feel sheltered. You don't want to leave that position of shelter, because leaving the position of shelter, the previous chapter to this one and the next chapter after this one give the consequences if you leave the shelter of Krishna. It's not nice. It's worse than not nice. It's scary, as we were discussing yesterday. It's very similar. I just end with this. There's so many things, nice things to say. Many of you have studied Sri Ishopanishad for your Bhakti Shastri. So the first verse, the invocation verse, describes the position of the absolute truth that's complete. And the mantra one describes how you live your life in that sense of completeness. The second one describes what you experience when you live your life in that relation with the complete whole. And the third one is what's life like when you don't. And that's what these chapters of Kapila Dev's instructions are doing, is taking verse number 3 of Ishopanishad and making 3 chapters out of it. Consequences of neglect of the personality of Godhead. Then we begin, the domino effect takes place. There's a cause, there's the effect of the cause. And the effects are not nice. So let me reverse by this position of humility. Without humility, the light isn't going to go on. We'll continue to struggle independently. Even in a life of, quote, devotion, we can just struggle independently. The real thing is taking shelter, and there's impetuses for taking shelter. Besides, we know our position, and it's one of suffering, and I don't like to suffer, so let me get out of suffering by taking shelter, and then we get out of the suffering because we took shelter, and then we go back to being, covered again. We slacken in our submission and get covered in struggle and go on endlessly. So bhakti is a way of life. It's understanding Krishna's actual position, taking shelter of him, and entering into our loving relationship with him, with affection and undeviating loving service. And then all kinds of, a whole other world opens, the spiritual world. But there's a price. You have to let go of this contamination of false ego and struggling for control and happiness and independent enjoyment and all those things that we're so familiar with. Generally, the process is gradual. And hearing and maintaining good association, and from that which we've heard, and in good association, continuing to follow the message with this hankering in the heart from the soul platform to be again in our relationship with Krishna, rejoining our eternal relationship with Krishna, even in the midst of this temporary situation that we find ourselves. Okay, any discussion? Srimad Bhagavatam is wonderful. Yes?
Thank you for explaining very nicely about how to surrender and then keep practicing surrender in different ways and be patiently waiting and taking the instructions and having association and practicing all over life. So in this aspect, like, what is the position that we should maintain? I understand that we should be a servant, but in real time, practically, we are all having some type of responsibilities and positions. So, like, when we try to act upon that position, there are consequences. So, how to perceive the consequence? How to perceive that and succeed in spirituality?
Okay, well, this was a similar question, almost identical question yesterday. The language was different, but the answer is the same. Chant good japa. What? the chanting of the holy name is an appeal to Krishna to engage us in his service. So all of what you outlined, you know, the complexities and duties and roles and responsibilities and things, they're just mediums of service. If the inspiration, if the consciousness of I want to be in Krishna's service is illuminated, then you do those duties and responsibilities in Krishna consciousness. And how do you get that? Chant good japa. It awakens the mood of service toward Krishna that you then apply in whatever you do the rest of your life. So the most important part of your life, most important part of your day, is how carefully you chant the holy name. And there's so many other things that help support that, but that's at the center. You know, the reading of scripture and the maintaining of codes of dharma and respecting other living entities and all those nice things. Hearing, you know, applying the teachings of scripture, keeping good association, all those things are to help this one thing. Primary means of deliverance in this age. Do you have something?
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
A little louder so they can hear in the back. They're straining to hear.
Taking shelter and keeping there, keeping under the shelter all the time.
That was the question that was asked Monday evening. How do we stay always in the mood of full surrender? That was the topic. We spent a whole hour talking about that one. It's not a mystery how to, it's the willingness. Because the willingness is weak, therefore it's intermittent. Sometimes, sometimes not. Sometimes, sometimes not. So we need to focus on, you know, like the spark and gently fan the spark so the spark can become a flame and the flame can become a blaze. Let the spark, that is, the impetus to be in our relationship with Krishna once again, become nourished, nurtured by our processes, hearing and chanting and associating and worshipping and offering things to Krishna with love, not mechanically, with love. In each of the little things that we do them with love for Krishna. At least cultivate like that, nourish like that. And hearing and chanting is the primary means of nourishment. So do it in a qualitative way with the spirit behind the activity of hearing and chanting is I wish to be connected to Krishna again, unobstructedly. So that desire is weak, but we nourish it by taking up the right means. With the right purpose and continue to stay, you know, to focus on that. And good association is going to help us stay focused. But it starts in the month of March. I conducted a japa retreat in
Houston. They had their, all the public schools had spring break for the kids. So we had at the end of the week, so they were all, you know, they didn't have to go to school. And one of the persons who was participating in the japa retreat with me and in a speaking position was Radhakrishna Prabhu Brahmachari, the disciple of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Very wonderful devotee. We just had some discussion. He was appreciating being invited to speak and had a lot of realizations by preparing and presenting. So he was just sharing that with me. And then at the end, just one sentence, he said, it really comes down to all the years of my devotional service. My understanding is it really comes down to, in response to your question, it really comes down to how much do we really want to go back to Godhead? Or how much, and I said, how much do we really want to be in our relationship with Krishna? Because that's what going back to Godhead means. And whether one stays always in this position of shelter of Krishna or this, you know, the vacillating position, depends on that. That is what is to be, that's the spark that's to be fanned with a little bit of fuel and not too much fanning that you blow out the spark or the flame. According to our position. Yartaham upayunjataha. According to suitability, we take up activities in terms of the external energy and engage the external energy in Krishna's service according to our suitability, according to our capacity, that inclination to be engaged in Krishna's service. Too much or too little, we're not feeling all right. But the hearing and chanting part is the activity, and behind the activity is this desire, I want to be with Krishna. I want to be in my relationship with Krishna. There's too much forgetfulness of Krishna that's causing, that's the root of all the misery. And I want to get rid of the misery, but I have to want to get rid of the root of the misery to get rid of the misery. And then it's eternal, it's not temporary. Not a band-aid. It's not something, you know, a temporary fix. It's a permanent change of consciousness. So the messages are there. The mystery is not how to. The mystery is the willingness. It's our volition. Yes. Going to happen like what? The negativity or the positivity?
The negativity.
Maya is very powerful. She's the Lord's energy. And she is dedicated to her service. She's embarrassed about her service, but she's dedicated to her service at the same time. She's carrying out a function on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So, on our own, you know, is it going to happen that way? Well, it's going to continue to happen that way to a degree, for sure, and to make it less and gradually zero, you know, is it going to be like that? Depends upon the quality of our submission. And the submission means, like this, relating it to this verse, understanding Krishna's position and the position of real shelter. I want that position of real shelter. I want that position of safety. I don't like this. So that's operative while the material conditioning is acting on the mind, and the mind goes over there, and the intelligence, spiritual intelligence that Krishna provides, says to the mind, come on back. And then there's this battle. It's the battle of our conditioning, but the conditioning is weakened by the power of bhakti. So we just keep investing in the power of bhakti with faith that it'll carry me beyond this circumstance. The circumstance may change or may not change. That I can't say. But how I address myself to the circumstance, that's something I can say. Let me take shelter of Krishna. That's intelligence. And Krishna will give that intelligence, and then the intelligence can control the mind. That's when things are right side up, not upside down. We're used to upside down. The mind dictates, and we do that. We think that's me. We just follow it. It's very strong. That answer your question? Will it be like this? It will, to some degree, it will be like this, but to what degree depends upon how we make our choices, how we exercise our free will, our volition to be in our relationship with Krishna instead of that struggle. Daiviyeshu gunamai mam maya duratiya. Yes.
We hear like respecting other living entities. I wanted to know like what is this respect in spiritual context, Maharaj? Respect in spiritual context, because somehow I feel my understanding of respect in the material world and among devotees, somehow I feel it's different.
Yes,
but
it is.
I don't know what it is, but also like I want to know how do we properly respect others.
Well, first what and then how. So what is, the Sanskrit phrase is, it's nice to understand things with other language because it just like wipes the slate clean. What's that? So, chitkana, the spark of consciousness, that's the other living entities. We respect that. That's what. Bhaktivinoda Thakur very beautifully and eloquently describes the root of all suffering is ignorance, and the essence of that ignorance is ignorance of that which is spiritual. He calls it tattva vibhrama. The mistaken misconception or mistaken understanding of tattva, spiritual truth. And he says there's four categories in this world. The Supreme Lord, the Holy Name, the devotee, five. The Supreme Lord, or the Supreme Lord in His Holy Name. The Supreme Lord, the Holy Name, the devotee, the process of devotional service, and chitkana, spark of life, the soul that's within every living entity. So that's what respect goes to. Now, there are some living entities that are covered. Most living entities are covered. And they're covered in different ways according to the modes of nature. So, there's a distinction between the covering and the spark of life. With discrimination, spiritual discrimination, we can make a distinction between the covering and that which is covered. And the respect goes to that which is covered. We may have some valuation according to, Bhagavad Gita's discrimination that says the mode of goodness is like this, the mode of passion is like that, the mode of ignorance is like that. That's the covering influenced by the modes of nature, which is different than the spark of life, the spiritual entity that's within. So now, that's what. Now, how is according to suitability of the position. So those that are in the mode of goodness, we behave with respect this way. And those in the mode of passion and those in the mode of ignorance. We need to separate the covering with that which is covered. That's Sankhya. So Bhagavad Gita starts. Then again in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there it is again. They're distinct. Now, what's appropriate for the circumstance? That's part of discrimination, is part of understanding Bhagavad Gita, is part of culture. I may respect a living entity that's deeply covered in the mode of ignorance by keeping a distance. But not out of disrespect of the spark of life that's within. And, with prayer, pray for the well-being of that living entity, or do something that's in the positive sense of giving benefit to the soul that's within. Like, for example, with Vyasadeva, he saw the condition of Kali Yuga before it became advanced, because he could look into the future. So he did something. He composed the Vedas and Srimad Bhagavatam. The sages of Naimisharanya, they saw, so they held the 1,000-year yajna. And, we see, and, we follow Lord Chaitanya's teaching. We distribute books, and we give the holy name, and we give Krishna prasad, and that's how we relate with respect to other living entities. And then depending upon the gradations, we do different things. But let us not forget, when we do those different things, the spark of life within. That's what we're honoring. And that spark of life's connection with the Supreme. It's really easy to forget that. So, don't forget that. Because then it'll become, I like, I don't like. And it's all about me instead of, the living entity and their relationship with Krishna. We get caught in the mind and it takes us for a spin. I think I'm going to end. That's all right. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.